Hello and welcome to another fairy tale episode of Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Caelan Burrows.
And we have just watched Artemis Fowl on Disney Plus. Right.
Yes, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
I don't think that's right.
That's not right at all. It is based on a book, right?
What's happening? What's correct?
It is based on a book, yeah?
Yeah, no, it's based on many books, apparently. Yeah. I think there's a whole series, actually.
Yeah, and the writer's name, he's an Irish fellow.
Right.
Named Eoin Colfer.
That's right, Eoin Colfer. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Who wrote the old Epiphanous Fool. That's right.
Yeah, that's the name. You got it, Caelan. You nailed it.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this was a rather hyped film, I think. So to be fair, just getting it out there right now, I did not read any of the books when I was a lad. Haven't read them as an adult. So I know that they're based on this, but I don't have any frame of reference. So all I've got is this film. But I do know that there was a lot of hype going into it. There were many people that were very much excited about a film version of this beloved childhood story. That being said, I think there was a lot of disappointment after its release.
Yeah, no, I haven't read it either. And, you know, full disclosure, we're not going to do spoilers up top. So.
Right, we'll say that this will be. You'll know when we go to do spoilers. We'll make it very clear. I promise.
But normally, I don't actually look at other people's reviews of this. But there were so many that came out before the film was even released.
Right,
I didn't have no choice. So, people hate this movie.
Yes, they do.
Now, I'm gonna say this, and I don't want you to think, but I'm saying it's a good movie. But I didn't hate it as much as everyone else did because I was still entertained. Now, was it quality entertainment? No. But there was entertainment to be had. It was leaps and bounds above the last film we reviewed. Oh, I'll say that.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know that I'm going to give it that high remarks as you have. I did not enjoy myself watching this movie. Almost at all. Now, to be fair, there is nothing that is worse than what we watched the last time. There, absolutely nothing. Regardless of how we come out of this film and regardless of my rating, there is nothing that will ever be as bad as The Last Days of American Crime so far. Yeah. So there are some good things to be had. But again, I don't have children. I didn't read the source material. And sure, you can have shiny visuals, but if you've got a story that is just almost impossible to follow, it's very hard for me to enjoy watching the film.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say it's impossible to follow so much as there's not really much of a story here.
that's also true.
Which is so unusual. Now, so this film was directed by Kenneth Branagh, which, you know, he's got a spotty track record, I will say. He does the Shakespeare stuff very well.
Right.
And I feel like he's had some success with the more blockbustery type things.
Yeah.
You know, he directed the first Thor for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I thought was a fine film. It wasn't their best, but it wasn't their worst, you know. Lots of, probably too many Dutch angles for my liking, but.
which is bizarre, because if you know anything about Branagh's filming, That's not like a staple of his, you know what I mean? It's not a Tarantino shot, you know? You don't think Dutch angle and Branagh. You don't put those together.
Yeah, I don't know. But the screenplay on this had four different writers.
Right.
None of which was the author of the books.
Yeah, we've gone through many films. We've gone through many, many films. And a key indicator that you are in for not the best ride is when you've got more than two writers that have had a hand in the script. Any more than two, and something gets amiss. It's just, I don't know why they keep doing it. But something always gets screwy whenever you've got three or more in the writer's room trying to work on a single script.
That, look, Benjamin, there's a lot going on weird with this one, because if you look up on IMDb, they list the runtime as an hour and 55 minutes, and it was only an hour and 30.
Right.
I mean, it felt like longer, but it was only an hour and 30 minutes, which means there must be another cut of this movie that has, I don't know, maybe the story?
I just imagine an editor just watching it and going, yeah, all of this that makes it make sense, just get rid of all that. We don't need all more fairies, more fairies.
Trim the fat. What's the fat? All this stuff. Oh, it's bad. Don't do that. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Maybe someday they'll release the Branagh cut.
Yeah, I really hope that's not a thing. I think the last thing Disney Plus needs is more Artemis Fowl. I'm gonna go ahead and say we don't need it.
Yeah, well, look, the fact that it didn't get a theatrical release and it was just straight to their streaming service was already not a good sign.
Right.
To me, that felt like there's so many other projects that they pushed back. You know what I mean? So the fact that they were just like, just put it out there, you know, meant that they didn't have a lot of faith in the project.
Right.
You know?
Right. Obviously take this with a grain of salt because we don't really measure films by this rating, but it is one of the lowest rated films on Rotten Tomatoes for Disney Plus. And that means of all the things that have been released, this has the lowest rating. I think it's sitting at something like 14%.
Yeah, it's because it's not good. It's really not. So to speak to the direction of the film, it's hard to say. I feel like the film is pretty to look at. You know what I mean? Aside from a few questionable CGI choices, I feel like most of the film is good looking. You know, I mean, they filmed it in Ireland, beautiful scenery, you know, which probably goes a long way to what I'm talking about here. But I don't know. I don't want to say this is all on Branagh's shoulders, but I mean, you've got a new actor who's taking on the lead role.
Right.
I don't know what he did to try to coax any performance out of this kid, but it wasn't there.
He's got a very, and this is, again, and I think you're absolutely correct as you're speaking to somebody like Branagh, because I feel like as a director, most of the time, even in films that maybe have some questionable choices, you can take something like Thor. I don't even necessarily think that Thor is a bad film, but it's not the best, especially even in phase one. But, you know, Branagh has an ability to bring out some of the best in his actors. And in this film, I don't know what went awry, but it's like he just gave him the George Lucas treatment and was just like, more intensity. And then that was it. And like, this child, look, maybe he will grow up to be a fantastic actor, but he is just dead behind the eyes. Like, I was about halfway through this film, I honestly believed he is incapable of emotion. And I should not feel that way about the one person I should be rooting for.
Yeah. I mean, shall we just get into casting then?
Yeah, we might as well. because you're right. You can't put it all on Branagh's shoulders. You really can't. I feel like he is probably a very capable director that is directing a film that's not for him. The match is a miss. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, the lead, Artemis Fowl Jr., as it were, is played by first-timer Ferdius Shaw. And I don't know. He was terrible.
Yeah, it was bad. Even for new coming child actors, it was bad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know, you know, given children, it can be difficult to get some stuff out of them, and they're not always going to be the most emotionally capable when it comes to carrying films. But we've seen that it's possible, and we've seen numerous kids in recent years who have led films and have just absolutely smashed it. And this kid does not have it. He is just unlikable at every turn. From the moment you meet him, you're just like, we've got to follow this bloke around the whole film. Like, he's...
Yeah, and part of that isn't on him. Part of it is the script, because this film does a lot of telling and not showing.
Right.
And so we're told that he's a genius.
Right.
From his own lips, really. The scene at the beginning where he's talking about, you know, I find it hard to, something about with his peers, and then he's like, yeah, well, you know, Einstein got it right sometimes, and Stephen Hawking, and it's like, you pretentious little twat. Like, you don't like him right out of the gate.
Yeah,
but again, we're just told that he's super smart. We're not shown it.
Right.
Ever.
In anything that he does, there's never a point where like, oh, there's the payoff. That's why he's a genius. No, you never see that, ever. And I'm sure, obviously, if they brought it up here, it has a much bigger role to play in the source material. But we don't see... And this is the problem with the way that the film... And I might be getting a bit ahead of myself, but this is the problem with the way that the film is shaped. And I think it has a lot to do with how the actors are portraying it. They are all told who they're supposed to be. And then the story doesn't really give us any reason to believe that. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, we're told he's a genius and we're told he's a criminal mastermind. And yet nothing he does in this film requires genius or criminal mastermindness.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's not even a criminal at all. You know what I mean?
At all.
And so for them to make that statement at the end of it, and by them I mean him, it makes no sense. If the film had been establishing him doing crimes,
right,
you know, maybe even if you were going the origin route, maybe they just start off small and he's running scams at school,
right?
You know what I mean?
Right.
So that we get to see what a genius he is, and that criminal element bubbling to the surface. And then when he gets thrown into this magical situation and he uses that criminal element to thwart the villain of the piece,
right. Yeah,
and then you don't have him spell it out for you. You know what I mean? You have the villains do it. You know what I mean? Like, how do we get defeated? I don't know. That kid's a criminal genius.
You know what I mean? Yeah, but we don't get any of that. This kid is supposed to carry the film and he just does not do a good job. He's not a likable character and he's supposed to be the main antagonist. And honestly, I could give or take anything that he does. I didn't care whether he lived or died, whether he found his father, whether he exceeded it. None of it mattered to me because I was so disinterested in this lead role. And then you give the more notable names like Josh Gad and Judi Dench. And honestly, I don't know why they're in this film. I really don't.
Well, clearly, Dame Judi Dench and Dame Josh Gad, they're there for the clout. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I guess Josh Gad is there to exposit, narrate. I don't know.
That was a weird choice, too.
It was a weird framing device.
It really was.
Especially because it felt like they abandoned it like half the way in. And then brought it back at the very end.
Right.
And that only left me with more questions.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Yeah.
What? Well, nice and captured.
Yeah, it's a weird framing device. And again, this all goes towards story. But Josh Gad and Judi Dench both make these bizarre voice choices. And I don't know if they were told to do that, but it is.
I do have a thought on Josh Gad. I can't explain Judi Dench unless, you know, sometimes you're on a set with someone and you sort of pick up their accent.
Yeah, right.
Maybe she just picked up the Josh Gad thing. I don't know.
She heard him do it on a take and she was like, oh, yeah. I like that. I'm going to do it.
But his character, his main attribute, right, is that he's a tunneler. And the way he tunnels is by eating dirt.
Right.
So that would maybe affect the sound of his voice. And maybe that's why that, you know, I'm not saying it's a good reason for him to have it, but that could make sense to me that that's why his voice is gravelly.
I guess it could, but it definitely felt like he was trying to channel his inner Christian Bale with his Batman growl.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe you know, I don't know, but did Judi Dench get grandchildren or something? Because she is dang dude Judi Dench. Like, She is the pinnacle of British acting. And twice, back to back, she's done films like this. And I can only imagine it's because she's got grandkids or nieces and nephews that are like, you know, hey, do this.
Look, that's part of becoming a dame, right? You just get to do whatever you want. You know, it's not just her. There's other dames out there that we like and appreciate that go off and do Fast and the Furious films for no reason. You know what I'm saying? Like,
But look, mate, that's no cats, all right? That's no...
That is true, but at some point, you, when you're a dame, people are just like throwing money at your way just to have you in their film for the clout, and you, well, what you got to do, right? You just show up. You just phone it in, as was the case right, here.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Last thing I'll say about characters and actors and casting in general, but and this is going to transition into story a little bit as we've kind of talked about it, and then we can talk about story, action, effects, all of that. But there was there's the girl who plays the daughter of the butler, right? It's like his friend, his niece, or daughter, or something.
I don't know.
She's exactly. That's my point.
In the movie.
That's my point.
I did want to talk about the Holly Shore character because that was played by Laura McDonald, and she was actually one of the high points of the film for me.
She's the which one? The fairy, right?
Yeah, she's the she's the LP con cop. I don't know.
Mate, you could just make it up, and I'd be like, yeah, that was there. I've no idea.
She's the fairy cop from the Emerald City, I guess. I don't know. That's how they were all dressed.
Could have fooled me.
But she was actually like, as far as the acting was concerned, I enjoyed her acting. She maybe she bamboozled me a little bit because she just looked so, I don't know, expressive and joyous all the time that maybe that helped lift me up in the dark spots of the movie where I would just be like, oh, she's happy. I must be happy. I don't know. I think she tricked me, Benjamin. That's what happened. But I enjoyed her. She's still like a lot of her character motivations and actions don't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, and to be fair, none of them do.
That is true.
But no, you're absolutely right. She's one of the few characters where she is acting, which you shouldn't necessarily stand out for that. But she does.
I mean, look, you know who else does some acting in this? Will Ferrell, for, you know.
You're thinking of Colin Farrell.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That is Colin Farrell. I'm always getting those two confused. You know, they look very similar. They're both chiseled and handsome.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say this not correct, but, you know, whatever. He did a fine time turning in half a day on set. Absolutely.
He did. He had that moment where it looked like he got something in his eye, you know?
The thing is, I actually really like Colin Farrell as an actor. This film, as you know, moving the plot and things, this film is just a mess. And so you've got subpar acting from almost everybody across the screen. And then you've got this story that is just, it's so muddled. I don't even know if we could unpack it in the spoiler section. It's just how convoluted and it's just bad world building, which is weird because, and I've said this in my review before, but like, yeah, you've got the formula. This is a very formulaic young adult novel, right? You've got a young child who's got parental issues, who discovers he's special. He's got to find a hidden world to unlock a doohickey that's going to, you know, save everything. You've got the map. Like, that's the basic map. And the fact that they've missed the mark by so much is just, it blows my mind how far off they got that.
It's an adventure film that don't go on an adventure.
Yes.
You know, because you've got your MacGuffin, your magical acorn that everyone just constantly is like, oh, that thing, but no one ever explains what that thing is.
Yeah.
Or why it's so important or how it got missing.
I just took to calling it the doohickey. I don't care what it is. Yeah. It's just...
But yeah, it's just bad. I mean, you have this thing, and then there's like, apparently the fairy girl's father, everyone's like, oh, he betrayed us. And I don't even think we find out that he's the one that took the thing until much later in the film.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's like a tossed away sentence. And it's like, don't you think we should know some a bit about that? And then it's like, everyone's in a scramble to find it only to, you know, well, spoilers. So save that. But anyway.
But you're right. It is an adventure film that doesn't go on an adventure. And especially when you've got when you've got the doohickey, right? You've got the thing with the stuff that does the other stuff, right? Usually in a good adventure film, you kind of establish that this thing exists, right? You do the whole, long ago there was an Oculus and it was stolen and now it has mysteriously disappeared and dark forces are at work to find it. Who knows what's going to happen? And then you can start your story. Yeah. We don't even get that. It's just a thing that appears. And even, and we'll get into this in the spoilers, I've seen the film. I still don't know what it does. Have no idea what it does.
Well, apparently, you know, it does magic, I guess. It's a magical acorn. But no, they really don't explain. And when it comes time, there's still no explanation. Can you use it? I don't know. Let me try. What? It's an hour and a half of underdevelopment is what this film is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All across the board. Now, that being said, I didn't hate it as much as everyone else. There are some big spectacle moments. There's a lot of action going on, and I felt like that was relatively well done. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, visually, I found this film appealing.
That is the strength of the film. I will give you that. That as far as visuals go, it is very visually beautiful, and the world that they actually create on screen is very good. When you first get to the fairy world, it looks great. It's, you know, the CGI and practical effect mix that they've got going on there. I think it looks really good. I think the set pieces in the actual house of Artemis Fowl's house are wonderful. You can tell that the people that made the visual effects and made the set pieces made it with a lot of care and concern. I just wish that the story had the same amount of care and concern because they don't add up. You've just got this beautiful film that doesn't mean anything. That's,
I mean, at the end of the day, nothing happens.
Absolutely nothing. So, there's no conflict, really. It's,
Shall we rate it?
Yes. I'm going to give this a 1.5. I'm sorry. I did not enjoy myself watching this film. So I'm going to give it a 1.5. 1.5. Everyone needs a lozenge.
I mean, look, I'm not going much higher than you on it, to be honest. Like I said, I definitely feel like I enjoyed it more than the rest of the internet, but not by much. So I'm giving it 2 out of 5 sand farts.
Sure.
You'll laugh when you see it, I guess.
Yeah. That's if you see it. That's if you're brave enough.
That was a moment where I was like, when it happened, I was like, wait, did that just happen? And then it was quickly followed by the... So that's where we're going, eh, Disney? Okay.
it's low even for them.
We're going to ignore the fact that they're supposed to be a criminal because we're Disney, but sand farts are plenty, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Man. Well, is it time?
I think so. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. So, spoilers abound. We're going to unpack this thing as best we can. So, if you do not want the film spoiled and you want to check it out for yourself before we get into this, then I would highly recommend that you bugger off. But if you have absolutely no intention of watching it and you want to watch us try to explain a movie that, in my opinion, is unexplainable, stick around.
Yeah, we're going to unpack this thing like a sand fart exploding out of Josh Gad's rump.
That's right. Don't stand behind him.
Oh, so I don't even know where to begin with this.
I really don't, mate.
Let's do a quick overview.
Okay.
Of nothing. At the start of this movie, things happen. Colin Farrell's character disappears. Like his chopper goes down somewhere. Turns out he's been kidnapped by a weird, scary person in all black that also has a raspy voice.
That also needs a cough drop.
Yeah.
That should be the name of this film. It should be Artemis Fowl and the Search for the Cough Drop. That's... The Search for the Sorcerer's Cough Drop. That should be the name of this film.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the dad gets captured, and then apparently the dad left a clue behind to his son, Erroneous Farrell, for him to help track down his dad. Right. We inevitably went missing, and then we get introduced to the fairy world where the doohickey, is that what you called it?
Yeah, right. The doohickey.
The doohickey's gone missing, and that's the thing that this evil person wants, and so Artemis has to try to find it, and the fairies are trying to find it, and then this fairy girl goes to the surface for reasons.
Sure.
Yeah, that was one of those things where it was like, I thought they were sending her to the surface for the thing that Artemis was working on.
Right.
But then it turned out she was going to stop a troll?
That doesn't show up until long after she's been there.
And, yeah, and then she does that. And then they're like, come on back. And I was like, but what about the thing? What about the trap that he set? And then all of a sudden she's like, no, I'm going to go clear my dad's name. And that's what triggers the trap. It's like, so he didn't even really set a trap.
Right.
I mean, he did. But no one would have shown up if she wasn't like, I've got to go set the record straight. What?
But you're absolutely right. And this is something that it carries over across all of the characters in this film. And there are a lot of them. And there are far too many. I know that you're trying to do this world build, but one of the things that some of the better films, like, for instance, Percy Jackson, Harry Potter, one of the things that those do is they don't introduce you to everything that the world can have in a single story. They space it out, they give you little bits, and basically entice you to be like, wow, I would like to learn more about this world. I would like to learn more about some of these characters I haven't met yet. I would like to learn more about characters. Like, that's the way that you usually do that, especially if you're introducing a series, right? But this one is like, throw it all in there. Everything you can get. You, mate, you're not for the 11th book. Put them in there. They're just like, every person that could possibly exist in this world is somehow in this film and important, and things just get lost in the shuffle. I brought up that niece, right, of the butler, and apparently she's supposed to be someone, and I am not even kidding you, Kaylin. An hour into this film, when they were fighting the troll, I literally said out loud, oh yeah, she's in this. I completely forgot she existed.
And one of the major problems, and that's what I'm wondering about this 20 minutes that was cut out, is that when Josh Gad is doing the narration, he introduces her character, and it was like there was the whole thing about, how do you get to know have someone of his age? And at first I thought he was talking about the fairy, but then this little girl shows up.
Yeah.
And then she spends like one scene with him doing nothing, by the way. And then we don't see her again until, yeah, like you say, the troll shows up.
Yeah.
And that's the result. So just to wrap up the end of this film, because we're basically almost there, is...
That's what happens in this film, by the way. There's a beginning, a bunch of flashing lights, and then the end.
Yeah. He traps the fairy, a bunch of the other fairies come to rescue her, and then they discover that the thingamajig, the who's-a-what's-it,
yeah,
the magical acorn, has been at the house the whole time in a vault, and then everyone sort of buckets off. And then the fairy uses the acorn to rescue his dad. That's it.
That is literally the entire film.
And they had the audacity to end it with him going, I'm a criminal mastermind, slow motion, walking towards the camera like he's a hero in Armageddon. Didn't earn it.
He says that at the end, and I was just like, Where are you a criminal mastermind?
I'll even go this far. Not only was he not a criminal, We don't see where he's a mastermind at all.
Yeah. It's so weird. And oh my God, everything about this film is just, the story is just an absolute mess. And it's surprising again, because you've got source material. So I can't imagine why you would need to cram so much into so little. It's just weird. And my other big beef with this, you know, talked about the villain, right? I know nothing about this bit. All I know is that it needs a cough drop. It's got a green light in its face for its communicator, and it wears a hood. That's actually, it. I know nothing else about this character.
I was even more confused, right? Because the one of the first things the villain does is it frees another person from jail.
Oh yeah, that was weird too.
And then it was like, you've been reinstated. And then when this person shows up, he's like, I'm watching you, Dame Judi Dench. I've got the power of the council or whatever they were. And it's like, how? Is the bad person someone on the council that had the power to release you? Because otherwise this makes no sense.
Right. And we never learn anything about the council to make those ties together.
We don't learn anything about the council. We don't learn anything about the man that was freed. We don't learn anything about the person that freed them.
Yeah. Yeah. When he showed up and was like, you're relieved of duty, we're going in with a troll, I was like, who are you, mate? What are you doing here? Move! It was so weird. But that is just how little story there is to this, is characters just do things. They just do things. And there's no rhyme or reason or motivation. That just, it's almost like they're reading from a script.
A very bad script. A
very, very bad script.
You know, because like you already said, Benjamin, we, you know, there's source material for this. Now, not having read the books, I have to come at this from a movie watcher's perspective, right? And one of the things that you look for as a viewer of a film when you're being introduced to a new, strange world is you're in. Who is the person that you relate to,
right,
that is your into this world? Yeah. That should be Artesia Felucia, the second, right?
Yes, that should be Anthony Fauci. You're absolutely correct. Yes. That is who it should be.
But we're isolated from him right from the start. Like, we can't, there's nothing about that character that I could see myself being that character, you know what I mean?
There's no point where you're like, oh, well, I'm a genius and a criminal mastermind too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I could, because he wasn't a genius or a mastermind either, so I guess I could in that way. I mean, sure, I could tell someone I am, so I guess in that way.
So there you go.
We're like,
I've got some things right, you know?
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, and then that character's not even introduced to the world in a way that introduces the world. They're just throwing things at us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All through Josh Gad's narration.
Right.
You've got all these weird elements from different types of movies thrown together, and they don't mix. Should have had, his character should have been more naive and thrown into this world.
Absolutely. Yep.
But like, literally thrown into the world.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I completely agree with you. And again, to reference other films that are very much like this, things like Harry Potter, Percy Jackson, you know, there's much more relatability to Harry Potter. He doesn't know he's a wizard yet. So when he gets thrown into this wizard world, he's very naive. He's in over his head. He doesn't know what's going on. So we don't know what's going on. And so we're following along into this wizarding world as we discover it. Percy Jackson is another great example. He's discovering that he's, birthed from ancient gods, and he's discovering it with us, and he's not prepared for it. And in this one, we're just like, whatever, mate, he's ready for anything. And we're like, okay, so why do you need to tell us about it?
Yeah, you want, it's fine to establish that maybe he's arrogant and that he's got a bit of a, you know, like I said, like the criminal element, you know what I mean? Yeah. Establish it early on. Establish he's charming and he can manipulate people. And then when he goes to the fairy world, maybe he's exploring and we see Josh Gad's character in that line at the prison. And he's like, hey, you look, you're not from around here. It helped me out. And then he's like, well, what's in it for me? And then there's a banter. We meet the character. And then maybe Artemis steals something that gets the Josh Gad character out. And then that's how they liken themselves to each other, become pals, mates, whatever. We see a bit of that criminal element going on.
You know what, mate? We should just write Artemis Fowl.
Oh, and look, I watched there was a behind the scenes thing, and they had the writer of the book on set, probably as a consultant, just have him write the screenplay.
He must not have been paying attention. Hey, he must have just been like the Gus Van Sant in Jay and Silent Bob, where he's just sitting there counting his money, not watching how the story's developing. Just, I'm busy. Well,
to be fair, making a film, it's hard to get the full picture of what the film is going to be while you're making. Right,
that's
you know
true.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like you said,
on IMDb, there's 25 minutes of this film missing already, right? And that seems like it was supposed to be released with that 25 minutes, and then when everything happened and they decided to stream it, they probably went back and re-edited it. I would not be surprised if I discovered that this movie had been edited twice. That it had a theatrical release, and then because it wasn't going to be theatrical, they pulled it, re-edited it, and then shuffled it back to Disney Plus. That would honestly make a lot of sense, because it does feel like there are a lot of gaps in this film where it just doesn't make sense. Nothing about this film makes any sense from a story perspective.
No. And we never get to know any of the characters well enough to like them, really.
Right.
You know what I said? Like I said, I'm convinced that I only like the fairy because she was just so happy all the time. You know what I mean? Josh Gad, I felt like he had moments where I was like, oh, hey, it's old Josh, you know, and I was enjoying it. Like, for me, the moment where he's actually doing the safe, when he's opening the safe, and he got to be just more himself and fun, I was like, I like this character. Where is this?
Yeah, it absolutely feels like he was stripped of the things that make Josh Gad, Josh Gad. He's a national treasure for me. Like, I very much enjoy Josh Gad, and I think he's hilarious, and I think he's very funny. But it's only when he gets to be himself, when he gets to really draw out the things that make him kind of be a spotlight on the film. And in this, they strip all of that away for most of it. You really never get to see the things that make him well. And honestly, you could have replaced this character with anybody and it wouldn't have mattered. It just wouldn't have.
It was like a miniature Hagrid. If Hagrid ate a roll of sandpaper, I guess. I don't know. It was weird. And that is where some of the most questionable special effects came in. When he does the unhinging his jaw.
Oh, yeah, when he does this whole thing.
To tunnel with the sand. It looked awful. It drove my girlfriend out of the room. She was so appalled by it.
It is a bit haunting. It is a little. The first time he did it, I was like, what is he doing?
And the fact that it was just blowing sand out his bum. I was like, what is going on? What is happening in this film? And it just says, it feels incomplete. It feels like, I don't know that 20 minutes would have done it, but it got to the end and I was just like, this feels like we should be starting the third act right now. And it was like, everything's been resolved. We saved his dad and we're going on a quest to stop people that we don't know anything about.
Yeah, like, are you ready? Well, I'm not now.
Yes, we're pretty much guaranteed that this origin story is not leading to anything else because no one has liked it.
And that is truly what is disappointing about this, is that you managed to kind of disappoint both people, right? Because usually, typically, when you do it in any kind of right way, I feel like you either create new fans and disappoint old ones, or you keep your old fans and you don't gain. But one of the two sides are usually satisfied, right? You usually appeal to one or the other. This one does neither. It disappoints fans. And then for people who thought, oh, maybe I'll check out the Artemis Fowl book. No one says that after watching this. You watch this film and you're like, yeah, I'm never reading those books, ever.
Yeah.
Well, that has been Cinder Blokes on Art and Miss Fowl. Thank you for watching. I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Kaelin Burrows.
And we will see you after the next film.